it's a small group, so be more discussion. Work in progress. So the title, we have the star here. So if you have Linux, whatever you don't know, what actually goes there, you put a star, find support.
I thought it was an expletive.
Yeah. So that's the, we thought the Linux thing, many people be there. So this work done with Aaron Pierce and Marcus Moody, it's just taking off. So I'll start out with doing a little bit of introduction and motivation. I'll go over the reasons why supersymmetry is great, why the little hierarchy problem is bad, things like that. Then I'll go through the LUT searches and the different search channels and show how it's going to constrain your model building. And then three, I'll get to the new work where we look at different models that could avoid LUT searches and have a light pings below the 114 LUT pattern. And then I'll talk about a prediction of these models, a generic prediction. It's X hadrons, which is like an R hadron, so it'll be a heavy state, colored state that hadronizes and will show up, make your light detectors, much like the R hadrons in the supersymmetry. So, like I emphasize, it's work in progress. Any comments are appreciated. So the standard model has been extraordinarily successful, almost too successful. Makes a lot less work for us to do. The CKR matrix describes all the flavor observables, electroweak sector pass level precision tests, and the last piece is sorting out the sector response for electroweak. But it's a single Higgs is in the normal standard, the minimal standard model. Two Higgs developed models, or such as the Type 2, which is SUSY, or other things like that. So. Yes.
You should have mentioned the third item. It only applies if you fit to the Higgs mass.
Right. So,
which is low.
Yes. So, this slide right here, the Higgs mass is 80 GeV in these bits for the S&T parameters, for example. And so, you can test with the standard model of Higgs mass, and the best would be something like 80 GeV. But there's room up above the lower bound of the left search is just 114 GeV. So the same kind of limit applies to supersymmetry. The LHC is coming online. It's supposed to probe the rest of the sector, which, it's one of the big things we're hoping to do is look in the Higgs sector and unravel the electric symmetry breaking. So this is a picture of ALICE, which was the first paper to be published from the LHC. Data. So actually in low mass Higgs, so something in the 115 GeV and below, it's actually very tough to discover the Higgs at the LHC. And this is just because of the large QCD background. A lot of jets are going to be produced at the LHC, and this will swamp things like HDPV bar. So we have the standard model Higgs, we have all these great tests that confirm the standard model, but there's reason to believe there's more to the standard model Higgs sector than just the symmetry. So the Higgs mass is the only dimensional parameter in the standard model. We know from kind of our effective field theory intuition that dimensional parameters aren't really natural. They should be on the order of the cutoff of your theory. We know that the cutoff of the theory of the standard model, we know there's at least one more scale, which is the Planck scale. So we think that the Higgs mass should be around the Planck scale. We don't have really a good explanation for the hierarchy between the Higgs and the Planck scale. So you need a very large tuning to keep the electroweak scale smaller than the Planck scale to cancel these quadratic divergences looking at the top moves. SUSY looks to solve this problem, and it relates bosons and fermions, as you all know. And it solves this by canceling the quadratic divergences and corrections the Higgs mass. On top of that, there's all kinds of interesting things. Dark matter candidates, radiated electrons, symmetry breaking, unification works better, and so on. So it's a good playground. The big problem is that in the supersymmetric standard model, it's the minimal one, the tree level constraint. Higgs mass tree level is constrained to be less than the Z bosons. So you need some large rated correction because the SUSY Higgs bound is also around 114 GeV. You need this large correction to lift MH above this bound. The situation gets slightly better if you go to a more general Higgs sector, and you can get an upper limit of 143 GeV, like a very general one. If you, and this part comes from making sure you don't have any night owls before we get started. In addition, why my questions for Symmetry is that no supervisor is already in favor of changing So, what's that?
Pinky.
Yeah.
So, it's also,
yes.
That you inherit 122 adjustable parameters.
Yes, so there.
Which is a cross.
Yeah, so there's a lot of those things you can do anything you want with that many parameters. So you use like flavor changing neutral currents to show up, for example. So the corrections to the Higgs mass, if you're going to raise it above the left bound, you do radiative corrections. They go logarithmically with this stop mass, so you have a top view column of the forest. And a bed here, and then you have this logarithmic term. So you need a large stop mass because to get your radiative corrections exponentially dependent on the stop mass. But the corrections, this also feeds into corrections through the same Coleman-Weinberg one loop potential to the soft mass squared parameter of the uptight peaks. And the corrections to that go like the square of the stop mass. So you only get a logarithmic gain here and a quadratic. Because this feeds into fine-tuning of the z-mass. So the z-mass goes like the mu parameter squared and the Higgs mass, this Higgs soft mass squared. So you need to tune mu against MHF squared to keep the electroweak scale light compared to M sub z. So already in the supersymmetric, the MSSM is tuning around 1% because of the left bound, which means a couple of things. Either sub z is wrong, their super partners yet. We don't understand fine tuning, so there's something else involved, such as vacuum selection, like split supersymmetry or something. Or you need some new wrinkle in the MSSM, to avoid these left bounds and keep things actually near as true. But
the 10%, does that include the two primes? Are you...
The 1% here?
Was it 1%? What was the
fine tuning is about 1%.
1%.
And that includes the two pi's. I can't just say it's one of the four pi's squared.
Yeah.
But what is it assume? Does it assume a particular thing about the stop? Is 1%, you have to say something about the stop.
Oh, so you can have, so this is the kind of vanilla case for this works. The stop also, you can have large mixing in the stop sector, we call them the stop agents, which would also raise the mass of Stephen Martin against the paper. That those type of ways of raising the Higgs mass. All right, so the goal of this talk is we're going to focus on the third case there and say that we can avoid this little hierarchy problem by saying that the Higgs mass is light and let mystic. All right, so the exotic Higgs decay is Higgs to jets, where jets is 4 or greater, is good to avoid the left surges. So this has been done in a non-supersymmetric case by Landsberg and Constantine Mache. Work along these lines was done by Dermasek and Gunyan. Dave E. Kaplan has worked on these in the context of R parity violation in SUSY. And Spencer Chang, Patty Fox, and Neil Weyer have also looked in on this in terms of Higgs to four loop.
So, yeah. I thought there was like a four-jet anomaly at Wendelboe. So, is this a signal-based statement that there are no excess four-jet events, or there are? I mean, you're saying we don't understand the four-jet event background enough to know whether there are
four-jet events or not? Right. I'll get to that in the next section. But yeah, it's that the searches haven't been in some areas of parameter space that I'll talk about, and the other is that the backgrounds are decently large.
But is it just that they're decently large, or, cause, I mean, it's a pretty clean environment, but...
Yes, it's true.
I would think any excess four-jet, which has significant event rate, or, I don't know, significant, I guess, the key point.
Okay. Well, I'll discuss this later, so wait about 10 slides, and we'll begin.
You can explain this anyway. Why wouldn't the Higgs want to naturally decay into everything else that it should decay into?
So there are searches in all these things, and they put bounds. So, okay, so the Higgs, for example, if it goes to BB bar, What you're looking at is the branching ratio, and all these things put bounds on the production of your Z and Higgs over the standard model ratio times the branching ratio of your final state. You have all these plots that look like this. So if the branching ratio is 1 and it's the standard model, you get, you expect that this would be 1, and so this is where this bound comes from. It's around 1/4 inch. So you can't have it decay to all the other standard model particles, but you have to look at each one of these instances and make sure that your point plot is below this black curve.
So the standard statement is that the Higgs is excluded 95%.
Right.
Up to 115 GeV.
Yes, and so that's with standard model branching ratios. Yeah. So 85% to BBBAR, some amount of times.
So how do you exclude that?
How do you exclude?
Why don't we see that?
Okay, so I'm going to suppress the branching ratio of BBBAR by increasing the branching ratio to this 4 jet.
Changing the total of the cable.
Yeah. So. Okay, so just again, so the C squared kind of branching ratio, we could ignore whatever these plots have here. It's really going to be this thing. It's just defined as the production cross section times the branching ratio to the final state. Right, so in the NMSSM, this is studied by this type of thing, was proposed by Hermersek and Gunning. So suppressing the Higgs to BBBAR branching ratio is a must, as we saw in the last thing. Just like to point out that. You have a slight excess here between 90 and 100 GeV, where the branching ratio actually goes up to about 20%. So you can either view this as some background fluctuation or maybe some hint of a signal. You have some BB bars. You have an acid.
That's a signal. Why isn't when it goes down?
Well, I'm just saying the 90 GeV Higgs is where we're going to be looking.
That's what you're aiming at. So you're aiming at actually believing that's real?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the parameter space allows that. So suppressing the Higgs to BBBAR branching ratio is small, and this is a must to avoid that bound because it's one of the strongest ones. However, the BU cow is small, so by adjusting the total width, you can suppress this branching ratio. That's not as hard as you would naively think because of the smallest column. So the Dermersick and Gunning knows that a two-stage cascade can avoid the left bounds of Higgs to BBBAR by having Higgs decay to an intermediate zero scalar. In the context of the NMSSM, this is accomplished by having the, so you have this S field, which is a Higgs field, and a gauge singlet representation. So when the S gets a bev, it produces a new term, the NMSSM. And you have a cubic term of that as well. So the pseudoscalar lives mostly in this S field, which I discovered it already, why you wouldn't see something radiating off the Z.
Why can't I just write the usual mean term as well?
So right now they have some kind of, so right now, say there's a Z3 symmetry, that would forbid a normal mu term. Okay. So that's the normal thing. When the AS, to keep AS small enough, they usually go to like a Pecci quin or an R-symmetric limit, which would, so PQ would make this small naturally. And so you can, that would also bring you neutral. Yes?
Let's say that they don't see the Higgs, the LHC up to 140 GeV. Are you going to repeat this exercise to have it?
So this would actually hide it from the LHC.
I've already written that.
Yeah.
So the answer is you're going to do that.
It's already done.
So actually is a...
But then we can never force it. Not
his fault. Let him go on.
Here. So as part of this, you actually won't see the Higgs at the 150 GeV or however high the Higgs reaches. And it's because of the gluon final state. It would be very bad for it. So, in the Dermersick and Gunning thing, this AS, this singlet pseudoscalar field, inherits its branching ratios from small mixing with the Higgs pseudoscalar, the big A naught. So, if heavy enough, this AS is going to, it's going to couple to mass, so if heavy enough, it'll decay to BBBAR. That has stringent bounds on Higgs to A, BBBAR, up here around 114 GeV as well. So, this is a non-starter. So, the next thing you might do, you say, okay, I can just decrease the mass. And say it had the branching ratio of this pseudoscalar be to tau leptons.
So Gundy and Company didn't know that?
No, they knew this. So I'm just building up. So what they have is they have the Higgs Forge house is there, the big super.
So,
what's sorry, that?
This your slide?
Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
Godzilla.
I think it's the construction story.
Oh, okay. It's messing with my eyes. So they point out this Higgs before tau signal could be, how the Higgs decays, this is less constrained at length, and the search actually cuts off at 86 GeV, which regions, but these are theoretically inaccessible, which means they probably shouldn't trust either of the theorists they were talking to. Mm-hmm. But they didn't do this search for 86 GeV.
So that's not an experimental signal-based cut at all, but yeah, the theorists told them no.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, don't bother, it's not allowed. So and it also cuts off at 11 GeV here, and that's just because it has to be twice the bandwidth. So that's a reasonable one. So you might think, okay, I just have 90 GeV Higgs, I have my MA, you know, less than 11 GeV, so I can just put a point right here. That's fine. That's where the difference is going. However, some new analysis of Aleph data has been underway by a group at NYU and Pisa that closes this region, essentially. So they've done the same type of search, they look at the same type of things for MA, and they have bounds of around 105 and 110 GeV. It's kind of where it cuts off, so it's kind of closes this natural.
Do you know what, when they were doing these original studies, were they thinking of this in the system? Why were they thinking of 4,000?
So these papers came out in like 04, I think, so I don't think, you know.
That's before. Okay.
Yeah, it's before.
So do you know why they were even thinking of 4,000? Just
I think they just didn't see a Higgs. So
yeah, okay.
What are other things that you could possibly search for? There you go. That's definitely the argument behind the VV bar. It's not actually even to a pseudoscalar Higgs, it's to some other Higgs. So you can have all these things in just a normal standard problem. Like number two, we had extra Higgs. Okay, so where we're left is like the Higgs to some intermediate pseudoscalar, and then goes to four jets. So this was recently looked at by Chang Fox at Wiener, and also Shabashaki has been doing some work in the context of little Higgs extended supersymmetry model. So this is our final state that we're going to look at, and we won't just be limited to four jets here. Eight jets will be another thing we're looking at.
How about four muons or four electrons?
All right. Two slides.
Okay.
So the Higgs, the four gluons, so Lep has done this search, again, cut off at 86, probably because it's theoretically inaccessible about that. And the way they do this search is that you have the Higgs decaying to this intermediate pseudoscalar, the intermediate pseudoscalar decays to gluons. At some point, if the intermediate mass is light enough, these gluons will merge. And instead of Higgs to four jets, you'll have Higgs to two jets. So that's the way their search proceeded, is they kind of forced it. They looked at how many, the probability of these jets merging, and that's how they set their bounds. So again, you're more sensitive to low MA, which is why this kind of goes down here. You have more statistics up here, so that's why it's left. And that's the search. So in addition to this, there's a model-independent search, right? So Opal is doing a search by just looking at the recoil spectrum of the Z. Z goes to leptons. You can assume that the Higgs is a narrow width. And so as a result of this, you can get some bounds on what the Higgs production cross-section will be. And so here they have 82 GeV lower limit of a standard model like Higgs. So you're Brian, for instance, you may be thinking, all right, all I need is a Higgs mass above 82, an intermediate scalar above 10 GeV or something like that. I need to avoid the case to B quarks, taus, gluons, things like that. Lep hasn't done any of the searches, so I should be, you know, fine to do whatever I like. So Lep hasn't done those. They also haven't looked for events like this. So the main idea is that you want to avoid something that someone just sitting in a room wouldn't naturally just pop out of it. It's like, oh, hey, I have, you know, 86 vents with 8 muons in them, or something like that. So you want to make sure that those, your Higgs boson decay isn't something that would be obvious at Lep. Higgs muons might also be observable at the tautotron, because it would be producing Higgs energies. So do these Higgs to four jet events qualify as pink elephants? So at LEP, about 80 Higgs bosons were produced in this highest mass range. So looking at their luminosity between above 206 GeV. So your question was about your earlier question.
A bunch of them. Which one?
The earlier one that I said, wait 10 slides.
Well, why do they understand the four jet background enough? You're saying
okay.
Still bad.
So we want to look at the Higgs to, you have about 80 Higgs bosons produced. You have these bosons producing, going to these backgrounds. And they have Monte Carlo these backgrounds in terms of these surges and supersymmetry surges. They think they understand what they mean. And you end up with something like 700 background events just with that many jets.
Okay.
And so,
so there's just no way to pull it out of the air on that Monte Carlo.
Right. So essentially what happens is that, and you're even just limited by statistical noise in the background, how many would actually show up. So do these four jets then qualify as pink elephant? So LEP does have SUSY searches for four jets plus missing ET. So this would be the Z going to neutrinos. And so the efficiency for their four jet signal is actually somewhere between 1 and 25%, which is a wide range. But even assuming the maximum efficiency, please, we get about four events coming from the Higgs that would be seen in this channel. So I see about eight events, and so this is just consistent with the background. They also do the same thing in the context of Fermi-Fourier Higgs, where say, is the Higgs goes to WW star. So there you also get events where the Z goes to invisible, and you also the two W's go to jets, and you search for that as well. So that's where. That's where I got the backgrounds from. Great. So the plan. Express the branching rate of B quarks by getting to an intermediate scalar.
Before you do this, so what's the constraint? Supposing it's just gone mostly to invisible, something invisible.
Okay.
What's the best one on that?
It's 113, I think. It's either 110 or 113.
And where's that coming from?
They're sensitive to missing energy, essentially. So you have the Z in one direction.
So you're going to hold the thing with what they see the Z and then they...
And they see nothing on the other side. So they're sensitive to missing energy switches. So suppress B branching ratio. Avoid the bound on low mass scalars to gain the Bs, Taus, and gluons. Have the Higgs mass large enough to avoid the bound on H to anything, the model and the bound, and dodge pink elephants and scalars. I had a lot of fun looking at pink elephant pictures.
Did you choose a little shot?
No, that was on there already. I was like, well, I can't just pass
people
that.
People were having more fun than you.
Yeah. I couldn't fit that picture on at the end of the explication. So that used
to. You had to kind of do the whole slide around the picture, right?
Yeah. the LHC, the problem is that with the low mass Higgs decaying to jets, this is going to be very large if you see the background. So Higgs won't discover going to jets, and so you'll look at your higher G longitudinal W scattering, and won't have any state that you see that unitarizes then. So your options are the Higgs is prevented in some discovery, could happen, or the Higgs is buried in back in the QC deck. Some work has been done by Chang, Fox, and Weiner, where the Higgs could go to Galois, and it'll depend on the decay of intermediates from the spillet. I'll talk about that later.
What about possibility three, that it simply doesn't exist?
So you know that there must be something that unitarizes the W longitudinal of W scattering. The Higgs could not exist, but the LHC should have the energy and luminosity to discover whatever it is that solves that. So whether it be a Technicolor theory or something like that. The main idea is that W boson scattering, because it has a Goldstone boson mode in it, the longitudinal mode is the Goldstone boson, the cross section goes up. And above, it's 800 GeV to a TeV, I think, the probability of it goes above 1, which is unphysical. So, you know, something new must come in there to unitarize this to make it probably less than 1.
So I have a model that does that.
Okay.
You should have four factors.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, you need something there. So they look at an anomalous triple boson.
noise violation in the entirety of www.cuplusy.com. So there's still an option.
Yeah, I'm not as familiar with that, so maybe we can talk.
But the option that you have that we story so far is that the only way you could miss light hangs at this left is to have it just for gluons.
Yeah, just the gluons, maybe even light quarks if you can figure a way to make them up and down quarks. But you have to worry about how you're getting to go to up and down quarks, make sure there's no bead quarks, and to avoid just the jet merge issue. So it seems that the Higgs to the gluons is the best way to do, I can avoid it going to bees and cows and do that way. Yeah. So yeah, that's a key point.
So does that mean one? Does that mean, I don't know if it's the view thing, but does that let other people think that naturally some new color state would be involved?
Yes, so that's going to be the hexadrons.
Oh,
you guys are good. So the goal is to have Higgs to greater than 4 jets. The way we're going to do this, we know from the NMSSM that we need the normal S field that couples to HFH down is a non-starter. So we want to introduce another gauge signal field we'll call N. The N1s or N bars or whatever. And we're going to look for an effective coupling of the Higgs to the N fields. So then we're going to look for a point where the branching ratio of H to N scalars is large. And then make sure that the N scalars be the gluon the dominant decay.
Well, you're in the right spot. You're looking for N scalars. You want the scalars to be colored.
Right.
Just so you know.
Yeah.
And in the right building.
Yeah.
We're all pushing on lawyers. So does anyone else want to introduce an overview?
So to decay the N field, all these models are going to have some type of term here in the superpotential. So right now I'm going with N being a gauge singlet. In the conclusions I'll talk about maybe another possible representation. So that N needs to couple these new vector-like fermions, XX bar pair, that should be colored so that we can get a gluon decay. And I'm going to have some vector-like mass here, XX bar. I can talk about it. This could come from coupling to the S field, for example, you know, weak scale. But I'm just going to leave it like this for now. This XX bar pair appears, weak scale mass, in things like the E6 gut models of Stephen King. Collaborators, you get some vector-like matter at the TV scale. And it's going to induce some loop decay proportional to this UConn coupling line. So that's going to be what we're looking for there. But at the same time, as a result of Susie breaking, since this N field is coupled to MX, you're also going to get some tadpole diagram here. Again, proportional to the same UConn coupling. It should be line and then X. So the VEV of this N field is proportional to this Yukawa coupling and some other things. So the VEV will also naturally be around the weak scale, which could lead to some problems. So for a simple illustrative model, why this would lead to problems, consider this superpotential you write down. So I have an S field coupling to my NN. So in the normal NMSSM things and the N decay terms that I wrote in the last slide. And then I look at my scalar potential, I have an HUHD, like N squared. Alright, so my N gets a tadpole as discussed above from coupling to the XX bar field. And now I have a mixing term here with my Higgs field. So my AN, my pseudoscalar from the N field, is going to mix with that big A pseudoscalar and inherits its coupling to quarks. Now, since the mixing with the Higgs field is proportional to that Yukawa YN, and the decay of the gluons is also proportional to that Yukawa coupling YN, the decay of A to B follow a dominant. So you use competition between a tree level mixing and a loop level. So your host, for example, is. So back to our ingredients for model building. So we have our two ways of decaying the Higgs to intermediate pseudoscalars. We have a coupling the scalar potential, like the model in the last slide. And so if you just write this down as an effective vertex in the normal scalar potential, this CV needs to be greater than 10 GeV. You can also have a Goldstone boson type self-coupling, where the Higgs couples derivatively to the Higgs squeeze to its fingers, expressed by some scalar point breadth effect. So to get a large enough branching ratio to this, just to be large enough that you don't have the decays to B quarks, you need this F effective to be less than that 400 GB. So those are the types of things you're looking for. So the first model that I show accomplishes the first goal, so the scalar potential coupling. So we need to add two gauge signals. The idea is that you're just going to move the final decay product that's going to be competing with the B quarks further away from the Higgs, so the mixing gets smaller. I'm just going to kind of briefly go over this because the argument is a little bit intricate. But the idea is to avoid directly mixing with the Higgs. So we find a parametric limit where this is okay. So I have my normal MSSM terms. I have my S coupling to field N1 here. And so this is the same model. If I stop here, this would be the same model that I showed you two slides ago, which we saw as hose. And then I have N1 fields going to N2 fields here. So again, I'm just competing against the BU Kawa coupling, and I can overwhelm that because it's small. And then I have my N2 that's going to be decaying to the ones.
So those N fields also have like a C3 quantum number?
The N fields are gauge singlets, so they're perfectly neutral in this.
No, but you said before that you have a discrete symmetry in the super potential too.
Right, so in this case, yeah, you could say it has a Z3 symmetry, and that's why I'm preventing from getting like N squared terms, for example. I'll come back to it, but yeah, in this super potential, one of the reasons why people like it is that I'm not writing down a lot of other couplings that I'll have. So and there could be an N1 squared times N2, or couplings with the S, between S and N2. These types of things are all going to be allowed, and they would generically mess up this picture as well.
You have to write them down.
I know. So it's technically natural not to write them down because of the holomorphy and the superpotential.
Oh.
But if you were to expect this to be an effective theory, then maybe you should have to write them down. So again, this is just my ways of accomplishing two of those ways of taking the Higgs. So the Higgs to 8 jets is what's going to happen. So again, it's a two-stage cascade. And these goes to N1, one goes to N2. And as we talked earlier, the scalar potential coupling between the Higgs and the N1 fields, it's easy to have a larger coupling to the B than the BB power, so I can suppress this branching ratio to BB bar in favor of this one. And this goes like lambda prime and YB, so I can find just make these large enough that that's okay. The next stage of the decay. I have different tadpoles controlling. So this is just going to be, I'm just going to say what the argument is to be able to know more and talk about it later. But you have different tadpoles controlling the mixing of the Higgs. And the size of this tadpole controls the branching ratio of N to these the BB bar. So as YX goes to 0, the tadpole of N2 goes to 0, and that tadpole controls the mixing of N1 and the Higgs. And so you can find a parametric limit where the branching ratio of N to 1 to BB bar goes to 0. Now you expect this would mess up your second part, but actually in the branching ratio of N2 to BB bar, this dependence upon YX cancels. And so actually the parametric limit is in this coupling of N2, which is coupling here of N1 to N2. So as that gets small, the branching ratio of BB bar at the final stage of the decay goes small. And so you have a parametric limit where you're allowed to accomplish this dimension. Reasons we don't like this model, you still have to fine tune all these scalar masses to be light. Because of all these beds, you'd expect all these masses to be on the electroweak scale. The parameter space is squeezed to get the M1 N1 less than the Higgs mass, and N2 less than half the mass of the N1 field. And for the same reason you're pointing out, the superpotential is not generic. So the next model, which is the one that we show, we want to use a shift symmetry to keep one of the pseudoscalars from mixing with these bosons. And that way we'll suppress the coupling of this pseudoscalar with BB bar. So, and on the other hand, we can avoid these fine-tuning issues of keeping the pseudoscalar and natural light, because it's going to be a super negative. So superpotential we have in mind. We have our normal NMSSM again, right? And we have a coupling this S to an AN bar pair. And then I have my decay terms for the N and the N bar coupling to my XX bar pair. And this part just produces my N U1. My U1 charges, so I have a new U1 symmetry associated with this N N bar. Plus one, minus one here. And it's softly broken by these YN terms here. So my mass and my pseudoscalar, my PNGB is going to be controlled by these YNs. My X gets a weak scale match when you get that with S. And so we want to break this U1 symmetry. We want to parameterize the little stones as being the IAN. So this little AN is what my Higgs is going to decay to. We have the other pseudoscalar, the big AN, which is just going to go on the Higgs. Then you have even not minus IAN. And then you have the depths of these fields and the scalar components. So the AN is actually not present in the Higgs particle potential. So that's just this first line right here. It cancels out in this term. And so you don't get the mixing that you were trying to avoid. So you can avoid the AN going to be that. So after breaking the U1 symmetry, I have my Goldstone boson derivative self-coupling. So I have couplings of this N, the scalar, CP even scalar part, to the Goldstone bosons, this derivative. I have a mixing of the N and N bar CP even scalars with the Higgs. I don't have a way of getting rid of those. So now I have, via this mixing, I have coupling my Higgs to the derivative coupling of this N and Higgs. And it's going to be suppressed by this F effect from earlier. So my AN will actually mix with these Higgs things, but it's going to be a two-loop effect.
To say any of this effect in extra weak data?
No, because all of these are gauge singlets. So all these N fields are gauge singlets. The XX bar pair, depending on the quantum numbers, could show up in, for example, the S parameter. But you're allowed to put an extra quantum.
So there's no flavor changing then?
Not as written right now. I'll talk about that a little bit later. Just briefly mention. But yeah, right now there's no flavor changing problems outside of normal MSSM color shape cycles. So the spectrum of this, before I get a little bit more in detail. So this is the coupling we're looking at here. The spectrum of this, after I put in the parameters I'm looking for, I have a Higgs mass of around 90 GeV. I have a pseudoscalar AN, which is going to be dependent upon the mass of my X particle, my colored vector fermion. And I want that 30 GeV or less, so my Higgs can decay into it. I have a light CP even Higgs, MS, around 100 GeV. And I have the pseudoscalar counterpart of this, so this lives in that S field, also about 100 GeV. I have all the other Higgs up around 300 GeV. So discovery potential. So this is of the standard model Higgs, that MH that I'm talking about. Depending on what the quantum numbers are, this X, I can also have photon radiating off these things. The branching ratio to photons is about 1/100th of the branching ratio to gluons, which is bad news. But Chang, Fox, and Weiner believe discovery could have been possible in about 300 inches to Barnes, the LHC, at 14 TeV. So it's looking less and less likely. And then I think fairly optimistic assumptions might be that discovery mode regardless. So that would be your main method of discovering the standard model Higgs. The Higgs that unitarizes the WW scatter. For the other Higgs, I can produce them in the normal gluon fusion Higgs. So the Higgs that live inside these N-N bar fields and heavy supersymmetric Higgs H, they all inherit their decay modes from this mixing with the standard model Higgs field. So I'll be able to discover them in the Z channels and W channels and top quarks and B quarks and things like that. So you can discover them, but you'll be able to measure their coupling to measure like the Z and C dimensions to accomplish the neutralization. Yes?
It's two photon business. How do you distinguish that from Higgs going into full triangle to photons?
So the branching ratio.
To do with the size of branching ratio.
Yeah, so the branching ratio of a normal Higgs going to two photons is very small because the Higgs can go through quarks. So actually, the Higgs going to two photons is a discovery of the standard model Higgs at these low branches. All right, so let's talk about the AN field. So the UN symmetry is broken by these U-power couplings, YN. The AN field acquires mass through the one loop Coleman Weinberg function. So it's massively proportional to YN times my vector fermion pair, vector quark pair MX, times this FN, this effective mass of my F fields. So we want to require that this AN field be less than 30 GeV, just phenomenologically. Let's see where that gets us. So, and I also want to look at my decay width. So my decay width is also controlled by this YN and MX coupling. And so this vertex effectively is a 1 over MX. So my decay width goes like alpha strong square from these, my YN times the bev of these N fields over this MX loop, and it's a loop back into it. So the decay length is this here, 10 to the minus 6 millimeters. It's a parameter dependence, MX around TV, depends quadratically. And YN goes up power to the minus 2. So this depends like MX over YN. So requiring that Higgs doesn't see, that LEP doesn't see displaced vertices, which I'm sure they would have been able, which would have been a pink elephant if Higgs goes to displaced vertices. We get this kind of power. So this MX over YN is less than 1,000 TV. So from my mass requirement, MAN be approximately 30 GeV, and this I can look at what MX should be. So remember this one, like YN times MX, and this goes like MX over YN. So I can just cancel out the YN dependence with some additional assumptions that one of these be much larger than the other, for example, and the N and bar bevs be about the same. I get this X field. It's going to be around less than or similar to a TeV. It's usually dependent upon what the N fields are, what the mass of my A and superscalar is, which is within reach of the LHC, which would be the only signal you have that this Higgs is decaying before the gluons in spare.
Just the word R should be replaced by the word R.
Oh, yes, exactly. So, yeah, that would have been the pink elephant thing. Left is no longer running. So these X hadron, X is right now, as written, has no decay modes. It could be decaying via some gut suppressed operators, or it could be decaying with mixing with light quarks. For example, you could write down if X is a 5-5 bar, it could mix with like a D quark, decay to a D plus Z boson or something like that. But if its lifetime is greater than 1 over lambda QCD, then it will hadronize before it decays, forming a heavy cored ion. So I didn't know what anti-red looked like, so I made a baryon of X, U, and D. If the lifetime is long enough, greater than a picosecond, it will produce some displaced vertices or heavy charge tracks in the detectors that show up in the UNG. And if it's charged like an X meson or a baryon here, it could be stopped inside the detector. So it'll be slowly moving heavy ions. So some of them might stop inside the detector. So this is kind of a generic thing that shows up in split SUSY as well. Part of the key to getting it long lived enough would be to avoid some non-trivial flavor dynamics. So by setting the decay, seeing that the scale of this decay would be greater than 100 T doable on flavor things. So these X's are produced with a strong cross-section of the LHC, and they'll hadronize. They can be seen as a massive particle of the muon chamber, or as be stopped inside the detector and decaying later on, and don't know that collision is happening inside the detector. So these things could be an early production cross-section of the LHC. For example, at 14 TeV, so somewhere between, even here, 1 TeV mass for 14 TeV, you have something like 0.1 picobots. So you'd be able to pick these out.
But
Did you look at, it's probably okay, the Tevatron bounds?
Right, so the Tevatron bounds are 300 GB,
which is why it prints off here.
So they look for, in the SUSE, for example, the Gluino that gets stopped in the detector is one way, and then the other one is the charged tracks the chains. Mm-hmm. And with 7TV, you could also see these, you know, not as quickly, but they would be visible after a function burning it down, you see. So the outlook, we can solve the little hierarchy problem with SUSE by hiding the Higgs below the left bounds on the Higgs maps. Simple way to do that is to have the Higgs decay to four jets. The way only then the Higgs will be buried in the QCD background of the others. So LHC would be low mass superparticles, which would be great. So we'd see a lot of supersymmetry, lots of things to discover. Except you won't see the Higgs. So these X hadrons should be X hadrons. Could be seen as an early signal experience. Some work to be done. We have some points that work inside this shift symmetric N3 MSSM, the one with the NM bar pair. So we have some parameter points there that would be useful to understand a little bit more generally how the parameter space is affected by, say, requiring a good electric symmetry breaking vacuum and so on. Right now, because the X particle doesn't decay, it'd be good to understand X particle cosmology and what allowed representations you're going to have to require it to decay and avoid the flavor bounds. And then something for as part of a larger program would be to try to classify what these intermediate Higgs states could be. So this work by David E. Kaplan looked at R parity violating SUSE, I think it goes to Gluinos, it goes to neutralinos, and those things decay to three jets or six jets or so on. But one thing that I've been talking to people about is trying, instead of having this be an N and bar pair, have this be a color adjoint, so an SU3 adjoint. Then you're protected from having the tadpole because of the color. And it seems like a 30 GeV Higgs should obviously have been discovered somewhere. A 30 GeV color adjoint should have been discovered at the Tevatron, especially if it decays to gluons. But
not necessarily.
That's exactly what I'm finding. So you get small part of the background, essentially the systematic background. So that's the work for them. Thanks for having me. Any more questions?
So the Gunnian model, so is there something, does their model do this too, get rid of, or was there something now that, because the left searches didn't search, doesn't mean that it's not real left, is that what the point was?
So the Gunnian model was Higgs to four taus,
right.
And their original model was written when it was just a theoretically inaccessible 86 GeV, so
right.
They put it at 95 GeV, and the Higgs went to four taus,
yep.
And it was okay.
It's okay.
So that was well and okay until, but this result that's coming out soon, I pulled that from the presentation. Yeah.
And that's 105.
So you're back into the not so natural things. So
30 GeV color guy, did you look at these claims by Schwartz and Becker, I think it was? They were around 30, 40 GeV. We'll see on the running of Alpha S.
Right, so I looked at this. So depending on so there's a little bit dependent on where you put it. So if the 30 GeV guy is a scalar, the running isn't large enough to affect the running between MZ and tau. Mm-hmm. The work I know has been done. Yeah, so that's
basically where the constraint comes from. You can avoid that here.
Yeah, so that depends on how large of a representation you can put it in. So the 8 is fine there. Fermion would be a little bit worse. So I think the only real constraint for that is the case of B quarks. So I think you're going to need to have a
total cross section also be in the paper.
The total cross section. So Bogdan, the rescue, Rocky Mambuani, and Casey Collins. He's one of the guys I'm signing about this. The cross section is large, but the QC background is huge. It gets worse as you look for smaller numbers.
Huh. How large? At Tevatron.
At Tevatron. So I don't remember for a 30 GB. Background was nanobar range after some certain cuts. I think the cross section was in the factor of 10 to 2 millimeter. I'd have to put the paper. Not that good. But yeah, if you could use root background, then you'd see like hundreds of significance. But since when you get the lower masses, you're in a systematic background, you get crushed. So yeah, there's actually, so along these lines, same with Paul's paper on the MHB and the 8-2-1/2 scalar going to charms, for example. Some guys in Michigan, Dan and I, are looking at things like that at the Tevatron. They asked me for my net graph files from our co-op.
So, a lot of things are just hard.
Yeah.
It's kind of surprising.
Yeah. So,
isn't you're saying that you can always arrange the QCD background so you'll never see the Higgs?
I don't get to arrange those, fortunately. But yeah, the QC background is large enough at a P proton-proton collider that it would be tough to see Higgs to go for jets.
It's just a little thing that sticks up on the QCD background.
Right, but you're limited by how good the... So your QC background is large, and then you're limited by how fine you can get the jets in your calibrator. So up to, so you can't reconstruct it to an infinite amount of Q. You get problems there.
This is depressing.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, it's inspiration.
But then you have X hadrons and supersymmetry.
Colored states hanging out, just waiting to be found. Because you're going to find them.
There's a word about the model of naturalness. I mean, at the end of the day, did you find something that you found was more natural than just having a heavier Higgs?
Than just having a heavier Higgs? So all of this has stops around the 300 GeV.
Yeah.
So 300 GeV is around the electron scale. So I view that as being a natural model. And softness.
Zero to three, okay. And then when you said it was 1%, can you go back to 1% so I can sort of...
So I didn't actually have 1% on the slide. Yeah, so I don't know how much the slide will help us. Yeah.
But the thing that was the actually, I just want to know what the statement is, so that...
So the little hierarchy problem?
Yeah, I was looking at you, you said that something was correct, and I just trying to look at what was correct.
Okay, so you calculate the one loop called Weinberg retention, right? And so what you're looking at is the field-dependent mass of the top.
Right.
The stops. Okay. So based on that, you can get some correction to the quartic term, the Higgs, because you can write your Higgs as... So you can write your effective Higgs mass. It's root lambda over V. So you get this correction to root lambda, and it's going to go like the top mass. This is the normal top mass that you measure. And then a logarithm of the difference between the stop mass, the Susie break, essentially. So since this is a logarithm here, you need a very large stop mass to make this large enough to shift your Higgs mass up higher. Right. So then the next thing is that in the same thing, so you get you as part of this your n total stop squared is gonna have some terms that are essentially constant, right, after electron symmetry breaking. And you're also gonna have an H square term from here. And so the Coleman-Weinberg potential is going to go like m stop to the fourth times the log here. It's going to scale over m stop squared. So this constant multiplies by this, and you just get a shift in what your h up for soft potential term. And this feeds into what your electric scale is, the Z mass.
your Z-max family U squared plus H squared. So this is the thing, this thing is going to cancel over your delayed with the current turning away would be your adjusting.
You have to adjust mu to cancel what the contribution from this MH
system. And the 1% number is the same limit, so that's divided by 4 pi squared.
Right, so there's ways to define fine-tuning, I think.
Are you using these E to J measures?
Yeah, like the derivative of mz squared with respect to your parameter, so be, there's that way of doing it. But just the simple way of thinking about it is because mz, okay, mz goes like, U squared, or so my plus square root of h up. Just factor out the mh up, because that's going to be the large thing, right? Just so you can just kind of get a real idea of what it is. And mh up squared times 1 plus u squared over. And so you just see how close these have to be. And so this number is kind of the percent that you're looking at. So it can be like 1%.
So the percent is the ratio is the percent or the difference?
This number right here, right, will go there. So it'll be 1 plus some number here. This is going to be close to 1. So this number will be the 1%. So that's kind of a rough estimate of what the fact cheating is. Is the ratio, so it ends up being the ratio of mz squared to this.
As you say, you're not saying there's a percent cancellation between two terms. You're saying that
so the percent cancellation is this, y mu squared and this have to be so close, but so yeah, that's what the percent cancellation is.
And the percent number is coming because you know the numbers of these things to be already large. And so MH U squared, I guess it's the top square. So you take
the
bound on the top square, and you take the value of mu that you know.
But it's not just the bound on the top square, it's the what you think the top square has to be because of the radiative correction. This makes sense.
Okay.
So you take the lower bound of what it has to be.
Yeah, the lower bound of what it has to be, TB. And so just the ratio of mz to a TV squared gives you the 1%.
And all the couplings involved are non-couplings.
This is just the new college.
In
here? Yeah, it's just the same. No couplings. I mean, there's other things that go in there, like other soft masses, neutrinos, but this is the dominant one. So you just increase your fine tuning.
So in your model with your two M fields, what is actually the dark matter?
So this is just the normal MSSM dark matter, right? This is just the normal MSSM dark matter. We analyze the neutralino sector more, but it could be...
Yeah, because you have a mixing.
Yeah, it could be a Lino-Higgs-Zeno mixture, it could be a Higgs-Zeno something mixture, whatever gives you the right annihilation cross-section. Depends on SP or something.
So the M field does not go into, or the supervisor of the M field does not go into the neutrino mixing matrix.
It does, right? So if it mixes with the Higgs, it should go to a neutrino mixing matrix as well.
It's not on the S, but also the Higgs.
Yes. So you have a 7x7 neutrino mixing matrix.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I'm just kind of so chill about my thoughts. I don't have a question.
All right, well, let's thank Daniel. Let's talk.